In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Super real.
Hey, before we get into today's episode, I just want to spend a moment getting you jazzed up about upcoming episodes. So, you know how we're a weekly show, right? You know that. That means that over the next few weeks, we're bringing you some truly fantastic stories. We're going to hear from an American guy who discovered that he'd been missing for 34 years. He was just looking on a missing persons website one day, and he found a photo of himself. And we'll hear about what happened next. In another episode, we're going to hear from a New Zealander who invented synthetic drugs. Do you remember bath salts and synthetic weed? This stuff was really popular for a while, and the industry was basically pioneered in New Zealand by a man who became a multimillionaire and then later rebranded himself a steampunk rocker named Starboy. Anyway, that's all coming up on What It Was Like. Okay, here's today's story. Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. So today's story first came into my life via TikTok. As you might know, if you spend any time on TikTok, it's full of a lot of conspiracy theories, a lot of crazy made-up stories about fake moon landings or evidence that the Incas invented the iPhone. So one day, I was scrolling and this video came up about a woman named Gloria Ramirez. And the video started with this photo of a young woman. I'd say she looked like she was in her early 30s. And she looked happy. I don't know, just like kind of sweet. But then I read the caption and here's what it said. Gloria Ramirez was an American woman who the media dubbed the Toxic Lady. In 1994, she was rushed to hospital where medical workers were exposed to her blood and became dangerously ill. Several lost consciousness treating her, and the hospital ward was evacuated. Gloria passed away, and to this day, nobody has been able to explain what happened. And I thought, that's interesting. So I turned to Google and fell down a rabbit hole. And here's what I learned. Gloria was a 31-year-old mother of two children. She lived in Riverside, California, which is a city about an hour inland from Los Angeles, about halfway to Palm Springs. And according to an obituary I found in the LA Times, and I'm just going to quote here, Gloria was a friend to all, quick to smile, a carefree joker who brought comfort and joy to others. But tragically, in January of 1994, she was diagnosed with stage 4 cervical cancer, and told she might only have a few weeks to live. As far as I can find, there's no information about how she spent those weeks until she showed up at the Riverside General Hospital on the evening of February the 19th. At that point, all the articles vary slightly on the details. Some say that medical staff saw like this oily sheen on her chest, as though imagine smearing like Vaseline on your chest. Others say that Gloria had this fruity, kind of weird garlic smell about her. But all agreed that everyone working on Gloria started to feel unwell, and several lost consciousness. At that point, hospital administrators declared an internal emergency and the staff were evacuated to the parking lot. Sadly, Gloria died that night, while many of the hospital's staff were left unable to work. And in one case, the doctor who was in attendance that night, Julie Gorchinsky, she spent several months recovering in a wheelchair. Julie is our guest today, so I'm just going to give you a quick intro. She was born in Canada into a family of doctors. When the family moved to California, Julie discovered surfing, and for a while, she considered turning pro. But in the end, she decided to study medicine, and she started doing part of her ER training at Riverside General Hospital. And that's where today's story starts. Because what happened, right? That's the question. You read about this case and then you go, wait, what? Why did this happen? Today, we're going to hear the story in Julie's own words. She's going to lead us through how the night really unfolded, and then how she spent the next 5 years recovering and battling to have her ailments taken seriously. And finally, she's going to tell us what happened. And I got to say, it's a surprising explanation. Basically, a perfect storm of really unlikely variables that came together under just the right conditions. But we'll get to that. So now I bring you Julie Gorchinsky. Hey, Julie, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So take me back to 1994. What was happening in your life at that time?
I think it was a Friday or Saturday, and I know it was around 7 o'clock, and it was a nice, warm California evening. And actually, it wasn't really busy because usually county hospitals are just crazy busy. And I remember, not too bad. And then got a call on the radio by the medics that night saying there's a lady coming in and she has a history of cancer and isn't feeling good. And her heart rate's going fast. And that's all we were told until, you know, my patient, Gloria Ramirez, came in by ambulance that night.
Okay, so you get this call. They say that they're bringing in a patient. What happens next?
So in comes the paramedics and my patient, Gloria. And I was kind of surprised because she was young. And we were all kind of expecting an older lady. And so they brought her in and we put her in a trauma bay. She was awake, talking. And on the monitor where it shows the person's rhythm, their heart rhythm, it was going really fast. And there's a word, us ER doctors call it VTAC or ventricular tachycardia. And actually it's a heart rhythm that isn't sustainable for a long time. Like it person's either going to pass out or they're going to need some life-saving cardiac medications to kind of break that bad rhythm. So we hooked her up to the monitor and talking to Gloria, put my hand on her arm, you know, and said, hey, you're okay. You know, how you doing? She said, fine. And I said that she's got a whole ER team here and we're going to give her some medication through the IV. And hopefully that will convert her to a normal rhythm.
So I just want to, there's a couple of little details in this story that I just want to pick up on. So can you describe the room? Are you in like, is it a big room, a small room? Just sort of describe the setting a little bit.
Okay. It's a trauma bay and there it's just one, and I call it a bay because it's not a room. It's not a private room. It's a bay and you can put three or four patients in there. And so there would be about four gurneys of patients that are critically ill.
And you say that Gloria was awake at this time.
Yeah.
You know, did she seem frightened? Was she talking rapidly or, you know, sort of talk to me about her emotional state.
She was awake. She didn't appear to be anxious or nervous, even though I'm sure she was, you know, coming in by ambulance and she was answering all questions.
Okay, so there were no red flags at this point. It seemed relatively routine.
Yes, it did. Yeah, for sure. So we gave her a medication, and it was going in. One of the nurses was giving her the medication.
So this is intravenous.
Yeah, intravenous. IV means intravenous. Yeah. So we're given the nurses was giving the cardiac medicine through the IV slowly and. myself and my supervising doctors and the whole team, we were always looking at the monitors, which is right next to the patient, and it wasn't working. And what happened shortly thereafter is that the blood pressure dropped and she lost her blood pressure. And at that time, Gloria became unconscious. And now this is where you go into the real ER mode of, okay, now we have to start, you know, shocking her. And I took my hand, trying to be the sympathetic ER resident. My glove broke at that time, but I didn't put on another surgical glove. I just held her hand on her forearm. And as she was losing consciousness, I told Gloria, we're going to have to shock you. I mean, she was already unresponsive, but I always talk to my patients because I don't know what world they're in. I don't know if they can hear me. And the nurse was drawing some blood at that time so we can see, you know, quickly at the bedside, if we can get a quick blood sugar, make sure the blood sugar is okay, get quick electrolytes and stuff like that. And it was at that time where the nurse handed me the blood. And the sounds really weird. Even 30 years later, it sounds weird. But, you know, I knew she was a cancer patient and I saw the blood in the syringe and there were like little particulates, little spicules of yellowish little, I don't know, I 30 years ago I said, you know, particulates, it still is. And I said...
Like crystals? Am I imagining like little yellow crystals?
No, like little, not crystals because they were like dark yellow, you know, but small little specks. And, you know, not fat because, you know, a lot of people later said, oh, Julie, maybe you were seeing little... fat particles, which means that the person has a high cholesterol or high fat. But they were, they weren't nice and round. They were like a snowflake, but yellow. And I just said, someone's poisoning her, you know, cause I'm just saying it, hey, she has cancer. And I said that, and I don't know why I said that. That just came to my mind, you know, cause like I said, I knew she was a cancer patient and there's something weird in her blood. I'm like, you know, someone's poisoning her. And around that time, I went and took about 10 paces back to sit down on one of the surgical chairs. And I wasn't feeling good and felt, I don't know if it was a little lightheaded or dizzy. And I told my supervising doctor that I need to go sit down. And he continued to resuscitate Gloria with the rest of the team. And when I sat down on the chair, next thing I remember, waking up in a gurney in the trauma bay, and they were saying, Julie, my last name is Gorchinsky, they called me Dr. G. They're saying, Dr. G, she passed out, and she's not breathing. And then I remember waking up in one of those gurneys in the same trauma bay, looking around, not knowing what people are talking about, because my mind was still very awake and alert. And they're saying, Dr. G, she's coding. She's not breathing. She needs oxygen. And then the night kind of progressed and kind of deteriorated from there on.
Oh my God. So I just want to go over a couple of little details in the lead up to you passing out. What I'm picturing, a whole bunch of people trying to resuscitate Gloria. Are we talking, you know, like five? What's the number here? How many people were part of the team at that time?
I'd say like six. You have respiratory tech, probably two nurses, my doctor, about six people.
Six people. All right. So there's quite a few. And in the newspaper reports that I've read, there were a couple of ominous little things that happened in the lead up to this. And I just want to get your thoughts on them. There's sort of several reports. Apparently, people were saying that Gloria had this smell about her, like garlic. Do you recall anything like that?
No.
Have you heard that?
Oh, people told me that a few months later, and that's when they were trying to figure out what was going on. Now, the hospital itself had its issues with maybe not the best ventilation, but Gloria herself, I didn't smell any garlic or any other odor.
Okay. And the other thing that I read was that some doctors reported seeing, I think on her chest, she had a sort of like an oily sheen. Did you see anything like that?
I did not see that, but as I found out later, that on the way from her house during the ambulance, she was throwing up and vomiting. So I don't know if that was vomit on her.
Okay. So what happened? You know, describe to me the next few hours from your memory.
Yes. So I just, again, being in a altered state by then, you know, the sun was setting. And I remember myself and 5 or 6 other people, they made a makeshift ER out in the parking lot. So apparently by that time, the ER was cleared of all the patients except for myself and 4 nurses, a respiratory tech and myself. And we were placed on gurneys and we were rolled outside. And so the whole ER was in disaster mode and it was shut down.
Mm.
And so the only people remaining to be patients were myself, 3 or 4 nurses and their respiratory tech. And at that time, they thought there must have been chemical contamination of some sort, because what they did at that time, they stripped myself down and it was dark outside. And I remember one of my colleagues, he was a resident of mine, and he's like, "Julie, we're going to have to take your clothes off." And while a couple nurses were holding sheets up so I wouldn't be nude, I guess, in front of everybody, and they were washing me down. And since it was nighttime, there weren't any lights out in the parking lot. And all I see is, I guess they were police cars and ambulances, and they were just all pointing towards the parking lot where the 6 of us were on the 6 separate gurneys, and they had their lights on. And so the lights of the cop cars and ambulance cars all had the lights. So that was the lights outside at night while they were, I can just speak for myself, while they were decontaminating me. And then I remember it was cold. I just see, you know, all those lights. And then next thing I remember is hearing Dr. G, she's coding, "Get her out of here." And the next thing I remember is being in the ER of another hospital that was down the way. I don't exactly remember the ambulance ride there. I just remember waking up in the small ER, and those doctors had those kind of moon suits on, those disaster white.
Wow.
Like, chemicals.
Like biohazard.
Yeah,
suits.
Yeah, biohazards. And I remember waking up there and I'm like, "Where am I?" And they said, "Well, you and another nurse are here in one of the ERs down the way." And they had just opened up the ER for myself and the other nurse and cleared out the rest of the patients to take care of myself and her, assuming it was a chemical toxic thing that happened at Riverside.
I think It's interesting. What I'm hearing here is you're obviously in and out of consciousness. You're describing this in like little vignettes in between. It seems as though like it's black. And then you sort of come out of the, emerge from the darkness and you're like, "Oh, I'm in the parking lot." And then you go back down again. It sounds disorientating. And I mean, it sounds scary. Were you scared?
I didn't know what was going on. So I wasn't scared. I was just in the moment.
Were there other doctors that had been affected that were also going through this journey alongside you?
In the Riverside parking lot, there were the other people, but I wasn't aware of their presence. It was just something I was told later.
Right.
But there was a nurse called Susan who was in the same ER. And I remember looking over at her and she looked over at me in the ER. And I could just hear the ER doctors talking about her, that she's not doing good. And then there was a respiratory tech that was also had a hard time breathing, and I believe she went unconscious, and then 2 other nurses that didn't feel good. But what I was told later, that the medics and most of the ER doctors were sick and they were throwing up and vomiting and having headaches. So most people got sick with those symptoms, but there was 5 or 6 that ended up in another ER, and ultimately myself, the nurse, and the respiratory tech that were in the ICU for a few days.
Okay. And I just want to cover off. So at the point where people start falling unconscious, you know, people are sick, what was the hospital response at that time?
So they went into internal disaster mode, and the ER team shut down all ambulances, all patients coming to Riverside. They got all of the patients that were in the ER and waiting to be in the ER. They told them, if you're not, you know, sick and you can walk, go to another hospital. And then the patients that were sick in the ER, they sent them to other hospitals and shut down the ER and was just focusing on myself and the other people that were sick.
God. I mean, the word disaster really sums it up. You know, it sounds chaotic. It sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. But that night, I can still remember it like yesterday. It was chaos. And even in all the chaos, the ER doctors, they did a great job.
Okay, so what is your first sort of solid recollection? You've gone through this really, disorientating kind of twilight experience. And at what point do you remember waking up and being like, okay, what's happened?
In the ICU at that small hospital.
Okay.
And I'm like, what's going on? And, you know, the doctor saying, well, you got fluid in your lungs, your kidneys are shutting down. We don't know what's going on. And so when they took out the breathing tube and I could breathe by myself, then that's when everything hit. I had a hard time recalling words. My throat hurt really bad. Where my liver is, doctors would poke on my abdomen, and I had the worst abdominal pain. And then one night, one of the nurses stayed up with me because I had the worst pain in my legs. It was worse than I had my appendix out. It was worse than my appendicitis. I got stung by a stingray. You know, it was the worst pain in my life. And my legs, I was just crying and screaming and screaming in my pillow. And they're giving me, you know, pain medicine. And I didn't know what was going on. And that was probably the second time I was scared, because I'm thinking, what is going on? And long story short, I ended up, the pain that I was getting from my groin down to my legs, I was getting, the blood supply was getting cut off at that time, which I didn't know. This is just later. And I developed a medical term called avascular necrosis, which is no blood supply to my knees. And eventually I ended up in a wheelchair and lots of surgeries trying to save my knees so I could walk and practice medicine again.
God.
And it was the months and the years after the ICU that was the most difficult, the first 5 years of recovery, because I was in pain every day, went through so many orthopedic surgeries. I was in a wheelchair for 6 months. I was in rehab, and, you know, I've been in pain my whole life, but the first 5 years were the worst.
I think if I was you, I'd have been pissed off, because, you know, you were just doing your job. You were just at work one day, and then it all started so innocently. So I know that, you know, you tried to just get some justice, some sort of legal justice here. Talk to me about that.
They weren't providing an appropriate environment to keep everybody safe. I wanted to get some compensation because nationally renowned orthopedic surgeons saying, you know, you're going to be in a wheelchair, you can't do emergency medicine hardly anymore. So I was going to bring a lawsuit against Loma Linda because that's my residency hospital. However, my program director, and this really upsets me to this day, he said, if you sue Loma Linda, we're not going to graduate you from your residency.
That sounds a little illegal to me. To really hold your graduation over you, you know, keep you over a barrel like that.
Yeah, you can use the word blackmail. You know, you sue us, we're not going to graduate you. If I was probably thinking better, I'd do things different back then. But, you know, to me, it was just in the moment, do what I have to do. And so it's like, okay, I'm not going to sue Loma Linda because I want to graduate. I want to be an ER doctor. I'm sick and I'm in a wheelchair and he's telling me this. And so Russ, my attorney, we took on the state because Riverside is a county hospital. And so we sued the county hospital.
Why were you not successful?
They said that there wasn't any proof to show that that the ventilation system was impaired. And Russ, we used the defense of, I'm not an attorney and I'm probably saying it wrong, is res ipsa loquitur, let the events kind of speak for themselves. Well, if everything was good in that hospital in the ER, then a lot of people wouldn't have gotten some symptoms and really bad symptoms. So it's hard to prove, but if everything was working fine and the ventilation was fine, then this wouldn't have occurred. They did settle for medical care for my future surgeries that lasted 5 years.
Well, I guess that's something. I mean, it's obvious that at this point you were exposed to some sort of god-awful toxin in that ER room. We'll get into what we think happened. But my understanding is that the county at that time basically said you'd imagined it. Like, I think their explanation was that it was a mass hallucination. You guys had dreamt this up and you'd shared this sort of like delusion together. I mean, that sounds nuts. To me, that sounds completely nuts. But talk to me about that.
I was told, I think I was in the ICU and I was told it's mass hysteria. And I remember in the ICU, I could barely talk. My throat hurt. Everything hurt. I wasn't feeling good. And I just laughed because to me, that's just so ridiculous because doctors and trauma doctors, I think, are the two specialists that if there's going to be something happening in the hospital or in the ER, we run to that. If there's a fire, we're going to run to the fire. That's kind of stupid, whereas everybody else runs away. ER people, we thrive for the craziest story to tell, the worst trauma to tell, the worst, you know, story like, oh yeah, this person came in and tried to do this and and so we kind of thrive on crazy happenings and accidents. And so to say mass hysteria is kind of funny, especially when I was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're a doctor. What is your professional take on mass hysteria? Just as a pathology. I mean, does it even exist?
Well, I've never seen it in my 30 years of practice. You can talk to a psychiatrist and there's things called hysterical blindness, hysterical paralysis. And that's when one person, you know, has a deep seated pathology that unconsciously produces, you know, paralysis or blindness. But as far as a mass, you know, people in masses, I don't know if it's documented somewhere in history. But I've never seen it in 30 years.
It seems to me that no one, you know, you were working at this place and it seems like no one had your back. You know, I'm not hearing a lot of empathy here. It seems to me there was a few junctions there where someone could have gone, oh, you know what? Let's do the ethical thing. Let's be nice here. Let's do something nice for Julie. And instead, there's just this sort of, it's this real dog eat dog kind of attitude of, oh, well, you know, your problem. I don't know. It makes me angry.
It made me really angry too back then. And it still does because nobody had my back. Yeah. Riverside didn't have my back. Loma Linda didn't have my back. My supervisors, who were my teaching ER doctors, they were actually told not to talk to me.
Really?
All of the ER doctors said, I can't talk to you.
Hey, so we're just going to stop here for a quick ad break, but stick around because we'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I want to move on to, you know, like what's the answer here? So what the hell happened? Gloria Ramirez came into ER, you know, she was stage 4 cervical cancer. She was dying. But then why did this have such a devastating effect on your health?
Okay. So with the blood test, they took blood from her, they took blood from me, et cetera. And I did have in one of my blood tests something called organophosphates. And organophosphates, they're used in insecticides, pesticides. You know, if you're a rancher, you kill your weeds with it, stuff like that. So that was, And I did have some symptoms of organophosphate toxicity, and my blood work supported some of that. Now, about a year later, after all this, people from, I think it's called Livermore in San Francisco, and they're a scientific facility, and I don't know how they got involved, but somehow they came up with a theory. Now, Gloria Ramirez apparently was throwing up when she was being transported from her house to the ER. And so that's important because the vomit and the food contents were on her body. Mm. And she wasn't using Western medicine for her cancer therapy. She was going to Mexico, and she was getting DMSO, which is actually illegal in the United States, but in Mexico, they have a lot of different, I won't say medications, but different fraudulent or scam things.
Snake oils.
Yeah. So somehow she was talked into using dimethyl sulfate that is going to cure and treat her cancer. Well, apparently reading the Livermore scientific report, apparently there may have been the perfect storm, because dimethyl sulfate, it can combine with a compound and act as like a carrier, like a taxi. You know, they open up the door, one chemical, come on in. And so when my glove had broken and I was holding on to Gloria's forearm with my hand that didn't have the glove on, it was presumed at that time that the dimethyl sulfate and the vomit that she had, and that she may have taken a suicide cocktail to kill herself, that contained organophosphates like insecticides before she came to the ER. And that's the reason why she was throwing up, because she might have taken something at home to try to kill herself. And then she was throwing up and then went into this irregular heart rhythm. And then when I was holding her arm and comforting her, her dimethyl sulfate that was in her system, and she was on a lot of oxygen, it combined to make what Livermore scientists say, you add the oxygen together and now it makes, I'm just going to use it incorrectly, I won't say nerve gas, but it makes a gas that now can be expelled in the air. And people in the immediate vicinity of Gloria and also me touching her, and then I would have gotten it absorbed through her skin, made this toxic gas that possibly myself and Susan and the other two nurses and the respiratory tech got the most sick. And then the organophosphate toxicity, as far as the other, let's say, possibility why she may have ingested something prior to coming and throwing it up, is because the paramedics who drove Gloria from her house to Riverside ER, they got sick. They had nausea, vomiting, and a headache. And mm-hmm. organophosphate toxicity, the three common symptoms are nausea, vomiting, and a headache. And
my God.
That's their scientific theory.
You used the phrase perfect storm before. I mean, it feels to me like this is just a perfect storm. You don't see many patients probably who have been taking dimethyl sulfate, but then you probably don't see many patients who have been taking dimethyl sulfate and ingesting insecticides, and they're on oxygen, and you're in an unventilated room. You know, right. there's this freakish array of component attributes to this story. So Gloria became like this sort of human test tube where she sort of mixed all this stuff up inside her and then dispelled it out into the air, and then you breathed it in and it had an effect like if you'd been exposed to like a sarin gas attack or something.
Right.
I mean, the chances of it happening are kind of like frustratingly slim.
Yeah, and DMSO is illegal for a lot of reasons. After I had worked 5 years on crutches. I got out of my wheelchair, but I still had surgery after surgery after surgery for 5 years. And so I was working on crutches for 5 years. And I remember this one patient in particular. She was a rancher and she just wanted to kill herself. And she just drank the insecticides. And I'm like, oh, I know what to do. You know?
Really?
Yeah. So I had three patients like that. And I'm like, oh yeah, nausea, vomiting, headache. Okay, you guys need to go get air. Okay, this patient, we need to decontaminate you. You took this to kill yourself. Yeah. I go, okay, I know what to give you. We're going to give you this medicine called atropine and this other one called 2-PAM. You know, it's going to reverse the toxic effects.
You've inadvertently become an expert in how to revive people who are you're exposed to nerve gas and insecticides. You could get a job on the front line in, you know, Syria or something.
Yeah.
Also, what an awful way to go out. What, like, I just can't, you know, drinking insecticide, I just can't imagine that would be in any way painless.
No. And me having some exposure to it, like I said, 24 hours after that incident, everything hurt.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been 30 years since this happened.
Yes, 30 years last week.
Yeah. And how are you feeling? How's your health?
I feel great, but also I've been in pain every day since this. Obviously, I've got the bone disease called avascular necrosis, had 20 plus surgeries, can't surf anymore, had back surgery, had neck surgery. And just different parts of my body have just been in pain from day one. But, you know, when some of the other doctors said, hey, you're not going to be able to practice ER, I was mad at them. But at the same time, I became an ER doctor. So I've been board certified and practicing ER for 30 years.
That's a win. Congratulations. I think that's great.
It is. And so I'm so blessed because every patient I see, the strokes and the heart attacks and the trauma cases and the abuse, I'm really blessed. What I went through was difficult and I deal with pain my whole life. But what I see in the ER, I am so blessed to still have my health and not be in a wheelchair and maybe take a pill or two, you know, for my aches and pains. But all in all, I'm lucky.
Wow.
I feel lucky.
I think that's beautiful. I think that you've found a way to feel philosophical about this and grateful for what health you have. That's, there's a lot of people complaining out there and you're not one of them. So we're getting to the end of this, but something I wanted to touch on was the way that this story has become sort of fodder for TikTok, and certain people have approached you over the years and gone, "Hey, Julie, do you want to talk about how Gloria was an alien?" And you know, just sort of talk to me about some of the media's or like popular culture's reaction to your experience.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of calls from Hollywood for several years, and still do. They're still calling it a mystery because they called it the toxic fumes lady. And then Hollywood wanted to do, you know, their take on it and make Gloria like an alien. Let's just say Hollywood didn't want to project Gloria in a favorable manner. And she was a human being. She was a patient. Maybe she made the wrong decision getting dimethyl sulfate. I don't know, but that was her choice. And that's why I've never really talked to anybody, because most people want to make the patient or the situation less than it is. I went through a lot physically and emotionally. Gloria went through a lot. Her family, her mother, but a lot of podcast people and TikTok were trying to pull me in. And I just didn't want to engage and give those people the time to take a story that really involves people's physical, emotional, and well-being and make it just a story that is based on a bunch of garbage.
You know?
Just for the ratings. And you were the only one that approached me that seemed to want to know more than just the toxic fumes. Because there was her name was Gloria. She wasn't a toxic fume sponge. She wasn't a germ. Mm. It was, again, just something that happened that night. And we all, you know, kind of went through it in our own way. And this is the first time that I've spoken publicly about all this, other than my friends, because I went through a lot. And I don't want to just be another number and be, oh, mystery case.
Well, you know, thank you. I really appreciate you talking to me about it. And I guess one of my motivations here is that this idea that Gloria, you know, she was a young mother. She was, you know, and she died really young. And now, I don't know, popular culture has has the audacity to just remember her only as this toxic woman. That's all she was. You know, she was obviously a mom, and she was obviously fighting for her life and trying, you know, obviously going to Mexico, it clearly indicates that she was trying to survive. And I find that kind of hard. Tell me about the daughter. So she was 5 years old. She reached out to you on Facebook.
Yeah, I was sitting in the ER and I had my phone, and I don't do Facebook, but when it gives you an alert, it said, "Are you the doctor who took care of my mom?" That's what came up. And I think that's one of the few times I actually went on Facebook. And I told my colleagues, I go, "Hey, I need to take half hour." And so my colleagues were working in the ER. They gave me half hour. And I was talking with her. And she said, "You took care of my mom?" I go, "Yeah." I go, she just goes, "Can you tell me what happened and what happened that night and what she said?" She wanted to know her last words. She wanted to know what her mom was doing when she was dying. And I felt so happy that I could answer questions that nobody could.
I'm so glad that you could do that for her. Have you heard from her since?
No, haven't. No, I haven't.
No.
No.
I hope she's happy. I hope she's doing well.
Yeah.
So what can we learn from this? What did you learn from this?
I learned a lot, but it's more personal stuff that I've learned, being both sides, being a doctor, been a patient, that life is so, you can't take it for granted. And but having people when I was younger that should have kind of had my back or should have comforted me kind of makes me less trustful. And so, kind of keep some people that where I work at always kind of at arm's length, because I'm not as trusting.
Yeah, I think I'd be the same. I'd absolutely be the same. So I really just have one more question. And that is, so before you were saying that you've said no to a lot of interviews and, you know, Hollywood executives over the years, and you've said yes to come on this show and to talk to me. So I really appreciate that. I guess my question is, why are you speaking up? What do you want listeners to take away from this?
The reason I'm speaking up is because there's a lot of medical stories over the years, and not that I followed them, but there was a tragedy and an ending. And I've never spoken up, so nobody knows what happened. And I kind of thought that was selfish of me, that people want to know, even though it was hurtful and sometimes it's difficult to talk about, and the pain and the emotions and all of that. But I'm thinking, wait, if people are asking me all the time, and podcast people are asking me, and Hollywood, and I'm getting shout outs from people from all around the country, I'm like, people want to know. And I'm the one that holds most of the information because I was there. And so I decided that I have to stop being selfish for myself, because people want to know what happened. And so I'm doing this not for me. This isn't really cathartic. It brings up a lot of emotions and anxiety. But maybe the people will know that, oh, hey, that doctor, in her words, told us what happened. And, oh, okay, so that is kind of what happened. Or, no, that isn't what happened. Or, you know, and so it's for the people. But after 30 years, I kind of sat down and said, okay, time to let some of the people that are interested, maybe they'll have an answer.
Well, Julie, I can't thank you enough. You know, I've been listening to your story and, you know, watching your face. And I know that this stuff's hard to talk about. You said it's not cathartic. And if you're paying some sort of emotional cost here right now, just thank you. Thanks for going through that. And I, you know, if I ever find myself in a Texan ER, I hope you're looking after me, because it sounds like you are an incredible doctor. It sounds like you really understand people, and you care, you look after people, you do the little things that others just forget about. So I think I'm sure that your patients have loved having you by their side.
Thank you for that. And if you're in my ER, I hope it's just to drop by and say hi and to go out for a beer.
If you've enjoyed today's episode and you're thinking, hey, I've got a story that's pretty cool, something that could work for this show, you know, something interesting but surprising, a little bit unique, please get in touch, hit me up. I'm always looking for story suggestions or feedback or, you know, whatever you got. I'm Julian Morgans on Instagram and Morgans Julian on X. And you know what? We'd love you to follow the show. You know the follow button on whatever your podcast app is. Just press that. We'll be eternally grateful. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Just a simple 5 stars should do it. You don't even have to overthink it. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Nicholas Feliciano. Jimmy Saunders did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge. And this whole thing has been a Super Real production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.